Hi, everyone. My name is Natalie Gochner, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I sit in the political center and have on the political right, John Dougal.
Hey, always great to be with you.
And on the political left, Shireen Gourbani.
Hello, listeners. It's great to be with you.
Okay, you two. Let's start with tariffs and China. And this president, once again, getting upset about something and all of a sudden deciding he's going to threaten 100% tariffs of critical minerals and the like. He's upset about critical minerals.
Yeah, it's because China put restrictions on rare earth elements and those minerals that are so critical to electronics. And
the stock market goes nutty over this.
Yeah.
This is the world we're living in.
This is the world we're living in. I also have to just acknowledge something that made me really sad this week was seeing that Guitar Czar, which is a business in Murray, is closing, and they are closing because of the tariffs. They simply cannot keep up with the increased costs and the uncertainty. And so we're seeing small businesses in our own community closing because of the policies of this president.
I've been in that store.
Yeah.
Yeah. As a ukulele player.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
But I would like to point out, this wasn't one that I saw as just Trump randomly throwing something out. This was him responding to Beijing, saying, whoa, 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 because Beijing's saying, okay, we're going to restrict not just, rare earth elements. We're going to restrict any of the components that are built into it. So, not just these magnets, but anything those magnets go into, which go into EVs and so forth. And this is one of those things, from my perspective, we have placed too much of our economy and too much of our military at risk of these type of rare earth elements being produced by China. And we have the ability to produce them here. But for decades, we have blocked the ability to actually harvest those and fill our manufacturing stream with them.
Okay. In other sort of international news, Shireen, we've got the Colombian president who's claiming that there were Colombians killed in the boat that was struck by the U.S.
Yeah.
21 people.
Yeah. So this is part of, I feel like, a very concerning story we haven't spent too much time on. Mm-hmm. But are these, I would say, reckless, really confusing from, I think, outside of the bounds of what we consider international engagement to bombing these boats that this administration has decided to do and saying that it is basically done to curb drug trafficking.
They're calling them narco-terrorists.
Narco-terrorists. Uh-huh. Unfortunately, this isn't how a lot of drugs, for example, like fentanyl, even come into the United States. So it's a misguided policy from the jump. But I also think it's just deeply immoral and illegal. Mm-hmm. This does not seem good. What are you thinking, John?
From my perspective, when the military was bombing or shooting those boats, you don't really know who's in them.
Yeah.
I mean, I know they said drugs were in them. I don't know. I haven't seen proof that shows drugs were in them. I haven't seen any military intelligence released about that.
Looks like they destroyed the evidence.
Well, it sunk. So, and this is one of those things that people will say, this is an act of a war crime.
Yeah.
And so I know the Trump administration says they were going after Venezuelans, but if you've got Colombians or other folks in there,
It's dangerous. Dangerous.
I don't believe these folks really meet enemy combatant in that sense of the word, even though they're likely drug runners.
Yeah. So, John, let's talk about what's on everybody's mind. We have these hostages that have been released. They're in Israeli hands at this point.
All the ones that are alive.
Yeah, 20 of them, right?
20 of them, and there's still 28 or so that were murdered. And I think 4 of the 28 have been returned as of the recording of this.
Shireen, I was just, going to bed last night, just praying that the night turned out the way I was hoping.
Yeah,
because we knew it was in motion, but you don't know it till it's happened.
Yeah, this is wonderful news. This should have happened many months ago. Mm-hmm. I think it's very...
Should never have happened.
Should never have happened in the first place. But I think what's difficult, like in all of this for me, is to see Netanyahu's... I think there just could have been a lot of movement under his leadership should he had chosen that earlier in all of this. And I'm just very sad that we've got, 28 additional lost lives on top of others that were already lost. And just the pain these families and individuals have been through is harrowing.
But to watch how the hostages were reunited with their family members and to see the hugs and the tears and the celebration of life as a result of that was touching. I'm intrigued by the Trump being cheered and then Netanyahu being booed as a result of this deal.
Yeah. What do they call it? Hostage Square? Am I getting that right? In Tel Aviv? anyway, they have the gathering place where they where booing and a cheering happened, and then you have President Trump speaking to the Knesset.
Yeah,
this is political drama. I just can't imagine what this is like to be on the team that negotiated this, from whatever countries, to the president boarding Air Force One and flying to Israel, and then. I've been in Israel and seen the Knesset. I've never been in it, but I look at it. It's like looking at the Houses of Parliament or something. Mm-hmm. It's
then
a
he immediately
it's
got
visual.
On a plane and was off in Egypt as well. So
yeah, and I don't know if the two of you watched the Sunday morning programs. We're taping this on Monday, but I watched State of the Union is what I watched, and both the National Security Advisor under Biden, Jake Sullivan, was on. That was really interesting to get his take, and then Senator Mark Kelly.
Yeah.
The astronaut from Arizona was on.
Yeah.
Both of them were really interesting.
What did they say?
Well,
what stood out to
you? I missed the show. So.
Well, Senator Kelly basically gave huge props to President Trump for negotiating this deal. And I was really happy to see it because however you want to talk about it, even if you don't agree with President Trump and his, you know, unconventional way of doing things, he got the negotiating team together, and he helped make this happen. And his choices to, hurt Iran, I think, helped with this.
Yeah.
And apparently he did a lot of negotiating between Qatar and Israel, and he has the Abraham Accords from his first administration. So I'm giving the president a lot of credit here.
Yeah. I think maybe what's lingering for me is now what happens, mm-hmm. right? Because I don't think that we've seen that Netanyahu is a reliable partner in this. And so what happens now to the people of Gaza?
Well, on this point, Shireen, this is what Jake Sullivan made clear, is that a lot of this was, you know, basically in motion during the Biden administration. This 20-point plan is basically the same plan. It's just a matter of the timing and when it comes together, and it can fall apart as easily as it can come together.
Yeah.
Well, Trump talks about this was 3,000 years in the making, and this is step one.
That's a statement.
Many more steps along the way, as you're pointing out. But if Trump's actions, and he was, it appears, intimately involved in this and strong-arming Netanyahu and others to get this deal done, I think this will be a major victory in his legacy, major success.
I hope it sticks.
Yeah.
I hope it sticks. Okay. We could spend a lot more time on that, but I want to just throw out a couple of ideas and see where you guys take this. If I kind of think about what's in the news, Trump administration appealing the judge's order blocking deployment of National Guard to Portland. Trump holds roundtable on Antifa. Trump warns of more layoffs of mass firings, target CDC and Education Department. I could just keep going, Trump, Trump, Trump.
He doesn't have much going on.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of my days in Washington. I was over public affairs at EPA, which meant I deal with the media at EPA. And every morning we would have a call with the White House. And all of our sister agencies. So the FDA has a lot in common with EPA, as does Department of Energy. And we would be on calls with the other media people and the White House just talking about what's happening.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure that the international or defense-oriented departments, Homeland Security and Veterans and, you know, obviously Department of State and whatnot. Anyway, these people must be spinning. How are they keeping up with this?
Are they working or are they furloughed?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, these will be political appointees. You're not on calls with the White House as a career service. You're a political appointee under the administration, and you're talking about helping with the public message of this president or this administration. And I can't imagine it's like to get up every morning.
So when you were at EPA, you would not have been furloughed.
Right.
Because there are other political appointees that are.
Well, yeah. And
I guess they're forced to work but not get paid.
And when I was there, we never had a shutdown. But the point I'm trying to get at is that.
How do you manage this narrative?
Can you imagine it?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think one of the questions, right, too, is they have started layoffs again, and in particular at the CDC, which is putting us in a position of risk when it comes to the next, frankly, even flu season, getting accurate information out, making sure that people have the information they need to stay safe. I'm really concerned about the cuts that are going to be happening throughout this furlough. And I think that it just is a continuation of this president's commitment to dismantle the federal government.
And so I would put a local touch on that by saying that in public land agencies and with the IRS, because of the Ogden IRS Center, those are the two areas where we are most vulnerable, would be IRS and public land interior.
Yeah.
And I would say, going back to Shereen, there are a lot of Utahns that don't trust the CDC, and so I don't think they blink an eye at downsizing and letting folks go at the CDC.
See how everyone feels when they have measles.
Because over years when, you know, they felt like they were discredited and felt like they did not get the straight truth from them.
I'm just in awe because I think of the CDC as so important to our, you know, well-being as a society. And you can have some...
Then why is there so... a declining trust in the CDC.
I know. I think it's because there's been a warfare on information. And I just...
Well, I would suggest it's a lot of it was self-inflicted by the CDC. And this is back under, you know, Trump first administration, then the Biden administration.
Yeah. I've told you this before, John, but I actually think it has more to do with the lack of education that folks have to understand a changing or evolving environment. Because I think what you're referring to specifically are the guidelines around COVID that then you felt changed or people felt changed, right?
They absolutely were changed
right.
And some were.
And that's what happens.
Blatantly, Anthony Fauci was lying to folks.
That's what happens when there's a novel virus. And I just think we have absolutely underfunded our understanding of this kind of public information. And I do think that it created a really confusing situation for a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, people were dying.
Yeah.
People were dying. And you tried to be directionally correct, but they didn't get everything right. But this notion that our public health officials are corrupt or that they're not trying to act in our best interest, I've never seen that. All the public health professionals I've seen have always been trying their best.
Yeah.
So, hey, we'll take a short break and then we're going to talk about Congressman Moore and some of his comments about the government shutdown. Stay tuned, everybody.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on UPR. We'd love to hear from our listeners like you. If you'd like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Once again, that's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Shereen Gourbani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
And Natalie Gochner in the political center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle.
And we are not shut down.
We are not shut down, but we do have Congressman Blake Moore, who's starting to let our, you know, his constituency know that he's really concerned that we're going to start feeling real pain from the shutdown. And he's specifically speaking, John and Shereen, to the air traffic controllers.
Yeah.
I traveled to Dallas last week. So you have a flight where you're departing and one where you're coming back. And both times I worried a little bit about would my flight go.
Yeah.
It's not fun.
Was it late or how did it go
was,
for you?
It was 2 hours delayed getting out of Salt Lake. But I think it had to do with something other than the air traffic controllers. But I'm still saying that I'm glad I'm not on a plane in the next few weeks.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was flying in and out of LAX, and my understanding is Burbank had significant delays and cancellations because of air traffic control. So there, I mean, this is definitely happening. I agree that there's real pain. I also think that there's real pain associated with the fact that basically 400,000 Utahns are about to see their healthcare costs explode under the decisions of somebody like Blake Moore. So to me, it just feels like this is such a broken moment that we're in, and I'm not totally sure how we get out of it.
Yeah. John, he spoke specifically, Congressman Moore, about a military brain drain. And I've been saying this same thing about just a public service brain drain. Like if you have devoted your career to public service and this is how you're treated, you might pick something else. And people sometimes call public servants bureaucrats, but I'm telling you, I spent a good part of my career in public service. There's a lot of really good people in public service that are doing it for the right reasons and that are making a sacrifice to do it.
Some of those people are at the CDC.
Or at least used to be.
But John, you're a limited government guy, but you probably still understand why, for the essential nature of government, you better treat people well.
Yeah, I mean, for the key things that you need the government to do, I think you want the best and the brightest coming into that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you want them looking to say, I'm out of here, or no, I don't even want to go into that job just because.
Yeah.
And so that is... But when it comes to things that I don't consider the core part of government, then I don't have a problem with that downsizing. I don't, you know.
Yeah.
And moving it back to the states and the local and to the people.
Mm-hmm. So we have a new poll that essentially asked Utahns about their views about political violence. How much are they worried about it?
Yeah.
Are they somewhat concerned? Very concerned. This is after the Charlie Kirk assassination at Utah Valley University. 58% of Utahns very concerned and 30% somewhat concerned about political violence. Tally those two up, it's 88%.
Yeah.
It's almost 9 out of 10 people.
Now, what I thought was interesting about this is that they were less on the verge about political violence closer to home. Mm-hmm. I thought that was surprising. Mm-hmm. Just given the kind of feeling that I have about where people are at in this state and the fact that they are heavily armed and that we just saw political violence in ways that we haven't seen before. I don't think that we're...
Why are we worried about the outside rather than here?
I don't think we're an exception.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. John, any comment on that poll?
Well, I think we have more faith in our friends and neighbors in the state. And so, yeah, I mean, just being heavily armed doesn't mean you're going to engage in political violence.
Mm-hmm.
Just
more likely to kill your loved one.
But when you look, when you watch the TV and you see what's going on in other states, then it causes you concern.
Over there.
And for certain news media, it depends on the event, but, you know, mm-hmm. I'm from Portland. Okay. You flip on one news station and it sounds like Portland's in mayhem. Okay. When you find out it's really a small protest on one block in the whole big city, it's like, yeah, okay, that's not much. This is Portland still being weird. So,
John, stay with you for one second. Do you see how Tyler Robinson, this is the alleged shooter of Charlie Kirk.
Yeah.
His defense attorneys are basically saying, you know, we want him in street clothes when he appears at his next hearing. Did that mean anything to you? The reason I ask...
Well, I think the key thing is in front of a jury, they don't want the perception, which is you're in prison. They want that will bias the jury. And so they want him to get the fairest trial possible. And so I think that goes in play with that.
That's exactly how I felt. When I read it, I just was like, that's the defense attorneys doing their job.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, everyone should be entitled to... that, right?
Yeah. You don't have to be.
Unfortunately, some are dangerous and you can't run the risk.
Okay.
And you tell the jury, not consider this.
Yeah. We also had our special session last week. Republican lawmakers voted to strip the Utah Supreme Court justices of the authority to pick their own chief justice.
Yeah.
This had a little bit of a history. They had passed this bill in the prior session. This was one that Governor Cox vetoed, but now they switched it up a little bit and now they have it so that the new version, I think it's the governor can appoint a single 8-year term.
Yeah.
And so it takes away some of the political manipulation because it's an 8-year term.
Yeah.
So in theory, spans.
Why didn't they want the justices to pick their own leader?
Well, I think they were looking going, you know, it works at the federal level to have the president pick the chief justice. So we should mirror that model.
Well, so why do we have an elected AG? I'm teasing, but we don't elect an AG at the federal level.
No,
correct.
No, we don't. We have a singular executive at the federal level, but we have a fractured executive in every state in the nation where
he knows governance, doesn't he?
Well,
a fractured executive.
A fractured, yes.
Well, that
is the term.
Well, I mean, but if you think back, I mean, you go into the South, Texas, you know, Alabama, Mississippi, theirs is even more fractured than Utah. And it goes back to Reconstruction coming out of the Civil War. They did not trust too much power in the hands of a governor.
Mm-hmm.
The governors led those states into rebellion. So in Reconstruction, they wanted to spread it out. That's why you have transportation commissioners, of which, you know.
Yeah, but John,
have insurance commissioners, agriculture commissioners, all elected. Dog catchers are elected just because they don't want to concentrate too much power in the hands of a governor.
Did you know all this, Shereen?
Yes.
I didn't know it to this degree.
Good for
both of you.
Now, what I will say, though, is what I'm concerned about and bothered by is the consolidation of power in the hands of the legislature. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, not something that I believe is an issue. Mm-hmm. This is an invented crisis around the fact that the Supreme Court in this state continues to look to our state constitution to make decisions that the legislature does not like. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what's going on here. And I think a lot of Utahns are actually starting to feel like what really is the hallmark of our legislature is this desire to reach into every corner of your life, whether it's telling cities which they can name their streets or the, you know, judicial branch who can be in charge of particular courts. This is a problem and really a hallmark of this legislature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I will say that I'm a big fan of a part-time legislature. I love having people that are everyday citizens making laws, and I love it that they're school teachers and, you know, realtors. And,
I was going to say real estate developers.
I just want a lot of it. But now that they all have office space up at the Capitol, it feels a little bit more full-time to me.
This is one of those hot-button issues for me. You know, Dave Hart, when he redesigned the Capitol and basically created offices for every legislator, when I first started— your office was your desk on the floor of the chamber and one drawer of a filing cabinet just off the chamber.
That wasn't that long ago.
No, that wasn't that long ago. Yeah. I think 2003, 4, mm-hmm. 5, 2006 timeframe. And then everybody got offices. You know, folks that chaired committees and leadership was in the Capitol building, others in the East or the West building. And there was this mindset, which is somehow we are going to vote and then go back to our offices, do work in our offices, and then come back and vote like Congress. Mm-hmm. That's not how it works in the Utah legislature. When you're voting, sometimes it's only a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes between votes. So mm-hmm. you're not going back to your office in between.
Yeah.
You're on the floor to hear the debate and the discussion, which
well,
I think is a
good thing.
You're
missing the vote.
You are yeah. not off sitting in your office ignoring whatever debate takes place on the floor.
Yeah.
And I wish that we would get rid of those offices.
Cool.
And put
I like
them to
this
more
take.
Productive
okay.
use.
Well, I like this take.
Okay. Well, so we also have Judge Gibson, who now has to review the legislature's map to determine if it complies with Prop 4. This is, of course, the redistricting process and this Map C.
Yeah.
Any predictions, you two?
I don't know. I just think this could get pretty interesting.
really? Okay.
Yeah.
Because we've got an election coming.
How so?
Yes. So we have an election coming. So the plaintiffs were also able to submit two maps, right? So there are a total of three maps that she will be reviewing to determine if the maps meet the muster. But what I think is more interesting and, again, more problematic is the fact that we have Senator Brady Brammer's bill that is really undermining what Utahns voted on in Prop 4 and just coming at it another way. So what will happen with that? Do we have, I know that there's been an effort to move forward litigation mm-hmm, on that mm-hmm, as well. Mm-hmm. So with that in place, if that is the law, none of these, I just think it starts to get pretty complicated.
So we're going to have a hearing October 23rd, 24th, where, you know, we'll hear more about this. John, what are you seeing?
Well, first thing is the initiative put in to statute the term partisan symmetry. Partisan symmetry is undefined. My understanding is this term is only in the Utah code. It's in no other state. And so the legislature needs to define what this is. They can't
what
just
leave
it.
Is? What do you think it is?
I don't know what it is. That's,
Shereen,
that's
what
why
do you think
to
it
me
is?
It means nothing.
Partisan symmetry.
And so therefore the legislature needs to define what that is. And they did. And that's what Senator Brammer's bill did. It said, okay, and he had one test for measuring partisan symmetry. The Democrats wanted some other tests, so he rolled in two other tests to say these are tests that the judiciary can use to measure this partisan symmetry.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's also important to remind folks that really a large part of the populace, probably a large part of our listeners, define themselves as independent or unaffiliated, which makes this question of partisan symmetry, I think, really a confounding one, a really interesting exercise. I hope it's one that doesn't disenfranchise us.
Now, yeah. over the years, the interesting thing is Democrats that have complained about the congressional maps, the map they really want is Salt Lake, Park City, Moab, and the Navajo Nation. Okay? That's really what they want in their ideal map. Well,
C's got a lot of that, and you.
Third Congressional District is largely that. Yes, mm-hmm. I'm in it. The East Bench and Salt Lake County is in there. But it's largely what they've been clamoring mm-hmm. for years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we've got an interesting few weeks ahead of us. In the next week, we have the Holy War football game, you two. We don't like to talk about sports on both sides of the aisle, but there is a cultural thing here.
Yeah, there is.
You know? Between a state-supported school in the University of Utah and a state-supported school in Brigham Young, and I'm teasing there, but 42% of the state are LDS, and that's their private school.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Going head-to-head.
Go why?
I kind of love this because I think folks know I grew up in North Dakota, went to a Catholic school. We were the Saints.
And is that right?
Yep. And the local high school, the main kind of local high school in town, Bismarck High, Demons. Saints and the Demons.
No way. That's pretty good.
So I've been part of Holy Wars in terms of sports for a very long time.
Yeah. Interesting. When I was growing up, we had the all-boys Catholic school that was in our area.
I'll go out, and then we only have a minute or so left on the program, but I think it's unfortunate that this rivalry is as uncivil or as mean-spirited as it is. I wish it were more fun.
Joyful.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Charging, but fun.
Yeah, I'm a University of Utah fan. I just assume not playing the same league as BYU. I think it's unhealthy what we've done in our state.
So why did you join?
Well, I mean, we got an invitation. Yeah, we got an invitation. but who knows? I just make it up.
They
could
be part of the Pac-3.
On a political affairs program to just say that sometime the cultural divide in this state hurts us.
I think that's right.
okay. Uh-huh. And I think it sort of happens here when you have BYU players, you know, saying some of the things they say about U players. And then when you have, you know, people at the U misbehaving like we misbehave.
Yeah.
It's just unfortunate. I don't think it reflects upon us very well. And I'd like to see us clean that up a little bit.
The question will be, will BYU serve ice cream to the Ute fans that are down there at Cougar Stadium?
Yeah.
Or will they withhold that? I hope not.
In the 30 seconds left on the program, Shereen, anything else you want to say to our listeners?
I would just say that I was able to go to LA this weekend, and similar to the conversations around Portland, it is an incredibly rich and wonderful place to visit. It is a place that is largely very peaceful. I felt very safe walking around there. There are certainly problems with homelessness and things that we see in every other, you know, major city. But if you can find your way to LA, there's incredible art and food and culture to partake in. And I had a great time.
Yeah. There's a lot of tough things happening in the world, but we're a spirited, happy bunch. And let's have a great week, everyone. Natalie Gochner with Shereen Gorbani and John Dougal. Programs produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, for listening.